Good morning. Welcome to the Daily Connection on KDOV. We're in luck today at 4 minutes after the hour because we have Matt and Chris in the studio. This is the program that we like to do each month on church history. This started nearly 2 years ago by now, and boy, has the Lord done strange things with this association.
I thought he was going to say something nice.
Yeah, well, you know, it remains to be seen. No, I'm sure the Lord has done good things with it. But, you know, we're back for another program, and it being the final Thursday of the month, we're going to check out an event, or today an individual, a really powerful individual.
He's going to pump you up, baby.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, he was he was as strong spiritually, I'm sure, as Arnold Schwarzenegger was physically. So, Matt, Chris, from Trail Christian Fellowship, welcome back.
And why, thank you, Patrick. We are talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but before we go there, let's just use our imaginations and set the stage a little bit.
Okay, let's use our imagination.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, just kind of clear your minds and let yourself think. Here we are in America. It's roughly contemporary times. The economy's really bad. You know, the war and the terrorists has not gone well at all. They've crashed into another couple buildings. Oil is now, the Saudis are not happy with us. Oil is up to $7 a gallon. Your 401k is maybe worth 5% of what it was. You know, things are bad. I mean, there's a Castle Superstore on every corner and the strip joint across the street from it. The gangs are ruling the neighborhoods. Drugs are out of control. And the administration stinks. I mean, it's just things are bad. There's no moral integrity. There's no leadership. Let's just put it this way. The carpet on the Oval Office could use a real good steam cleaning. Mm-hmm. And that's the picture that we have here. Just picture how you'd feel in this way. Fortunately, it's an election year, and there's a number of candidates rising up, and boy, there's one that is a really powerful leader, a dynamic speaker. He's a decorated war veteran, published author. Boy, and he really sounds like he knows what he's talking about. He's talking about, you know, getting rid of the, chasing out the drug gangs, you know, getting the economy back on its feet, you know, stimulating industry.
Family values, return to
back
family.
Family values. This guy goes to church all the time. He's talking about strengthening the church. I mean, golly, this started to sound like the guy that we need to put things back together
In the next election.
Mr. and Mrs. America, Mr. and Mrs. Christian, is this your candidate or what?
And wait. Before you say that you'd get behind a candidate like that, do you realize that what we're talking about is actually something that really happened, only it didn't happen now. It happened about 70 years ago, and it happened not in America, but happened in what we know Germany. And the candidate we're talking about is Adolf Hitler. And this was the candidate at the time that promised law and order. And the Christians at that time were very much in support of Adolf Hitler. He was the candidate, the man that was going to bring order and bring power back to Germany. And this is the milieu in which we find Dietrich Bonhoeffer involved in working in ministry.
And that happened for Hitler in what, 1933?
That was really good. Well, he'd been around for several years, but what we want everybody to understand is not that we don't support Hitler. The guy's a goober. I bet you a dollar he won't be in heaven when we get home. But the thing of it is, we want people to understand that the people in Germany, I mean, if we were transported back there, it's very likely that we would be sucked up in this whole thing, too. We would buy this hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it just, you know, we tend to think that the German people were easily fooled, and that's not the case. They were really tired. Things were really awful. And this guy actually sounded reasonable. He was making some good suggestions. The hideous, dark, evil things that he was responsible for were hidden for the most part and didn't come to light until later in the war. However, there was at least one guy that just smelled a rat, by golly.
And that's the thing. And the reason we talk so much about Hitler is because, of course, the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer cannot be told apart from the events of World War I, Hitler, and World War II. Mm-hmm. Because this is a crisis in the history of the world, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer's ministry, his entire life, brief as it was, is lived against the backdrop of these events and these people. And Bonhoeffer, at the time where Hitler rises to power in 1933, he finds himself as a Christian leader, as an ordained minister in Germany, in an ethical conflict with the general tenor of the church movement in his country. First of all, Hitler put the church under his control, direct control, and he had what was known as the Führer concept, which was the idea that basically the Führer was the archbishop of all the churches in Germany and was to have direct control of them. And Bonhoeffer felt that that it was one of the roles of the church was to stand against the political injustice of any political leader, but specifically one that was oppressing different people for race and ethnicity. And so he felt that this was a conflict, really, between church and state.
So he wanted to be the Führer, you're saying, like the leader of the church, not the Führer.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm not very good at German for whatever reason. I just don't know why. But
Ich bin ein Organer.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
The other part of it was the fact that there was a clause that was put into the state church of Germany, and that was that no one of non-Aryan descent could hold the pulpit. And if you had any non-Aryan blood in your bloodline, you were not allowed to be an ordained minister and hold a pulpit in Germany.
I see.
And so Bonhoeffer, at this point, finds himself in a real ethical quandary and decides he needs to leave. And he's also very frustrated because of the moral cowardice of the church and the moral cowardice of a lot of his friends. And so he leaves the country, and he takes a pastorate in London. And at this particular time,
Just before the war.
Yeah, this is 1933, before 1939, when the war breaks out.
Okay.
So he's in London.
So Hitler's in power, obviously, because he's making the edicts. Mm-hmm.
And Bonhoeffer is out of the country at this particular point in time, and he takes two German-speaking congregations in London. But also, his ministry and his church begins to become a safe haven, really, for Christians and Jews that are seeing the handwriting on the wall and are beginning to flee out of Germany before the storm starts.
He actually makes his own church. He comes up with, I think there are 18,000 pastors in Germany, and when it's obvious that the German church is going to go with Hitler, he actually forms what's called the Emergency League and gets out of 18,000 pastors in Germany, 7,000 to sign this this protest,
wow,
really, which is pretty good. Now, not all of these guys stayed with him. As a matter of fact, very few did. As pressure increased and the Gestapo tactics increased, as we all know, during the 30s, more and more of these people took off. But out of this core group, he eventually built what's called the Confessing Church. And they took a very hard stand about this, called the idolization of Hitler was idolatry and godless. And that this did not sit well with the administration.
Bit the wrong critter on the toe.
Oh, my gracious goodness.
Right. And so he returns after a couple of years, returns from London and goes back to Germany.
Wow.
And at this particular point in time, he actually takes over. He actually had his doctorate in theology from University of Berlin and was a very popular lecturer at the time. And he begins teaching classes at the Confessing Church Seminary in Finkenwald, Germany, and serves there for a number of years. And this is actually the time when he writes two of his wildly popular books that we still read today, The Cost of Discipleship and also Life Together from these experiences. It was a small seminary.
Picture a Quonset hut on the Baltic coast, because it's completely illegal. He has been removed from any, they won't let him preach, they won't let him publish, they won't let him speak. So basically he has to do this on the fly, undercover.
Wow. And, he's underground.
He's underground, and eventually the Gestapo catches wind of the seminary, shuts him down, and basically they take the students and they say, okay, you guys have a choice. You can either join the military or we'll imprison you. And in fact, 27 of his students were sent to prison. A lot of others fled. And Bonhoeffer, at this point, goes underground, and he begins spending time traveling secretly from village to village throughout the eastern part of Germany and supervising some of his students who had taken over small congregations. They were ministering illegally because you had to be ordained by the state, and these were not recognized pastors, but they were remaining true to the gospel.
So World War II actually now breaks out.
1939.
And Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as you imagine, he is an extremely marginal person politically right now. I mean, nobody wants to touch him. Nobody wants to be associated with him. The only reason, as a matter of fact, he's not carted off to a prison camp the way it is because he grew up in a very respected German family, high reputation, a lot of connections in the aristocracy and whatnot.
Well, his mother was actually a countess in the in the German aristocracy.
His grandfather was the Kaiser's pastor. I mean, so there's a lot of social oomph here, and that's really the only reason that Dietrich's still walking around.
And in 1939, the beginning of Hitler's War of Conquest, two things happen in Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life. First of all, his brother-in-law and his brother are involved in the German resistance movement. Okay, they're in the military angle, working the military angle. They're in the military, but they're also secretly, if you will, double agents, because what they're trying to do is also undermine and see what they can do to stop Hitler. And Bonhoeffer has a meeting with these guys at this point and becomes kind of aware, and they're trying to recruit him in. And he doesn't at this particular point officially join at this time, but he's offered a teaching job in the United States of America at Union Theological Seminary in New York. And he comes to the United States for a couple months, and it was actually the summer of 1939, and he realizes he made a horrible and colossal mistake in that decision to come to the United States, and he deliberately chooses to go back. And the reason being is simply that he says, you know that this war is going to end, and I'm going to be needed to restore Christianity back into Germany. And if I'm not there to share with them in the time of trial, I have no right to come back after the war. And so he gets back on the boat and heads back to Germany, right back into the fire.
Basically steps back into the meat grinder, knowing exactly what's coming. None of this took him by surprise. Bless his heart. Now, this can be really confusing. A lot of people don't understand that there were several secret agencies, intelligence agencies in Germany. Everybody knows the SS. Everybody knows the Gestapo. What they don't know is that the German intelligence outfit was called the Abwehr, and the army, Hitler was not popular with the army. Believe it or not, they actually didn't like him. Their officers were aristocracy. They always resented him as an upstart, and he was not a very good military tactician, and he was telling them what to do. So the army intelligence was sort of a hotbed for dissenters, believe it or not. Seems odd, but his relatives, Dietrich's relatives in there, his brother-in-law especially, finally ended up getting him a job, which is all that kept him out of the draft eventually, because he had so many connections with church councils in Sweden and America and England, some of his...
All over Europe.
Yeah, that they said, what they told the Gestapo is, here, we're going to make this guy our agent, and we're going to send him around to pick up information. Well, what they didn't know was that they were really sending Dietrich out to talk to the Allies and kind of feel him out and find out, well, if we're able to assassinate Hitler, will you guys support us?
What would be the chances you'd get behind us for a coup? And so Bonhoeffer is actually what we call a double agent. And one of the other things that he did was he had a ministry called Operation 7. And Operation 7 worked at smuggling Jews out of Germany, because at this point the concentration camps are being built
going
and they're going full time, and the walls have dropped down. Jews are not being allowed to immigrate peacefully; they're being deported and shipped into the concentration camps. And so they would help smuggle Jews to safety in Switzerland, and then Operation 7 would also secretly funnel money to them to help them live and survive abroad. And so this is part of the...
This is a resistance movement, Operation 7.
Operation 7.
That Dietrich Bonhoeffer's involved in.
He's involved in that, but he's also...
Involved with the Abwehr.
Yeah.
And,
who are plotting to assassinate Hitler. And so he's, for a couple years here, in the middle of the war, Dietrich is really tiptoeing through a very twilight world.
Wow.
And he hates this.
Very much so.
Oh, this is killing his soul, because he loved Gandhi. He thought the nonviolent way was the way to go, even though he's a Christian. And the fact that he was involved in an assassination plot, the fact that he was involved even with anything violent, just hurt his soul so badly. But what he said was, in his memoirs, he said, you know, I would rather do evil than be evil. When he was faced with the two, either help Hitler kill millions of people or take violent action against Hitler, he said, hey, I gotta do the least of these two evils, and that's take Hitler out.
And he was not informed, actually, of the assassination plot until very late in the game. And was kind of given a choice, you know, should I back out of this or continue on? And Bonhoeffer realized that if he stayed involved in the assassination plot to kill Hitler succeeded and the war ended, he felt and worried that he was going to lose his moral authority as a pastor because of the fact that he was involved in you know, so how strongly he felt about, you know, about even participating in tyrannicide, which is what it was, he decided to continue on. He said, this is so important. I've got to do, I cannot stand back, morally stand back, and do nothing when I have it in my power to do something.
One of the most attractive things about this guy, Pat, is he's a disciple of Christ who, instead of allowing himself to be overwhelmed with these doctrinal issues and all the stuff going on, all the complex thoughts, you know, weighing the issues, basically he's looking at, my gosh, you know, they're killing the Jews and they're terrorizing the world. Boy, I don't understand even my own heart about this, but that can't be right. I can't go there.
Sounds like he had made that decision a couple of times earlier anyway.
Oh, man.
You know,
absolutely.
Steve, go back to the frying pan, if you will, to the turmoil and the stress.
But not, but not allowing himself to be paralyzed by his own confusion. Just trusting God and pushing forward, even in a direction he didn't like, but it was better than the alternative.
And if you can imagine that really his life and his ministry was the entire time lived in chaos and confusion, which is kind of an amazing thing when you think about the fact that, as witnessed in his writings, that he was a very deep and very profound thinker, and yet his entire career was, a lot of it was lived on the run, you know, moving from point A to point B, watching things in the world collapse around him, and yet he had the grace of God in his life, you know, to continue and be faithful, even though he, you know, he didn't live in a time of peace where he could spend a lot of time in meditation and thinking, and yet he did have a serenity, and he did have the ability to think deeply in his work.
And it all caught up with him, though. In 1943, about halfway through what we know as World War II, is finally the Gestapo unearthed some evidence that connects him with an assassination attempt. It's not really strong, but it's enough to get their attention, and so they arrest him, and they put him in prison. And once it's made known that he's kind of a high-class aristocratic guy, they treat him very well for the first year or two. But as things progress, and it becomes, he is more and more incriminated in the assassination plots to kill Hitler. And Hitler knows about this guy. He is not an anonymous guy. Hitler knows him personally, he and his brother-in-law. And towards the end, it's grinding down, and he continues, Hitler gives orders, and Himmler, I believe, to personally put these guys in harsher and harsher conditions, kind of burying them, if you will, deeper and deeper in the Gestapo prison system. And gosh, we haven't mentioned his little fiance. He falls in love before they're put in prison. He falls in love with a young German woman, 20 years his junior. And
in confirmation class, nonetheless.
In confirmation class, and yeah, nothing. Everything's above board. Nothing bad here. But they fall in love, and she ends the war, searching southern Germany, going to each of the camps on foot, looking for her husband who has disappeared. Oh yeah, this, I mean, rip your heart out, tearjerker stuff.
And it's the reason why we have a lot of the letters and papers from prison. The book that he wrote is through that relationship.
Mm-hmm. So. As a matter of fact, his personal letters to her, 38 love letters, were sealed at her request, and they are in the Harvard Library to be made public this year.
So we don't know what they say. Hopefully there'll be a book released or something that will have the contents of those letters, but those are to be released this year.
Well, by and large, it's just about what you'd expect. As the war ticks down, it's only days, from the liberation of the camps by the Allies. The planes are overhead all the time. And Hitler, 3 weeks before he commits suicide in his bunker, sends the order, these guys are not to survive the war. I don't want Dietrich Bonhoeffer to survive the war. You take him out and get rid of him.
And so they hang him.
They do, by golly, just a few days before the end of the war. It hurts. You know, and you wonder, gosh, God, how could you let something like this happen? And yet, I'm reminded of Paul, you know, going into Jerusalem, even after is Agabus that prophesies, he's going to be bound and beat up.
And troubles will await the man who wears the belt.
Man, oh man, and he does it anyway. And it's almost, you know, you just have to wonder, what is the Lord doing here? But it's something good. The things that have come to us as part of Bonhoeffer's example, his willingness to basically stand up and spit in Hitler's eye when the rest of the world is quivering, cowering off in a corner, boy, this guy, I can't really use the adjectives to describe his testosterone level that I'd like to.
You know, when we talk about the legacy of Bonhoeffer, you know, a few things do come to mind, and I think one of them is just the fact that he did not take the road of safety and comfort. Mm. And I don't think anybody would have faulted him for what he did, you know, taking German congregations outside of Germany during this troubled time and ministering to them, which in fact he did. And I don't think anybody would have faulted him for continuing his distinguished career as a theologian in the United States during the war's years. But he acted upon his conscience, and he acted upon what he felt God wanted him to do. And that was to go back and fight the evil in his own country. And so I think that he serves as a powerful example in that way. And, of course, his thoughtful writings on ethics, upon the scriptures, and his vision of the church. Part of what makes all those books so poignant and so powerful is simply the fact that they were forged through...
You know, and even all his relationships with other prisoners, with the guards, I mean, we can hardly go into it. Everybody that met Dietrich was impressed. Everybody, even the SS doctor that supervised his execution, was kind of stunned at the way things went. Bonhoeffer went to the gallows quietly, smiling, said a prayer, and then just walked right up. And the SS doctor says, you know, I've never seen a man die like that. Everybody's testimony that came into contact with this man is a man utterly given up to God's will, utterly given up to letting God decide where his life's going to go. Because Chris is right. The Lord would have blessed the two congregations. I would have blessed his work with the World Council of Churches. If he had taken any one of those little bailouts, God would have blessed that. And yet he just continued to step right back into the fray. I love this guy because he's such an example of a man willing to stand up and say, you know, the emperor does not have any clothes on, boys and girls. He is buck naked. Look at that. That's ugly. Man, oh man. And that takes guts to do that.
You got to admire the courage, yeah, and the fortitude and the willingness just to go back and stand up for what's right.
And not
that kind of character you just don't find,
no.
You know? Because I think we would kind of quiver and cower.
Oh, I would.
I mean, you know, quiver, but he said, you know, bravely, the cause is right here to stand against Hitler.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've always been known to want to take the path of enfeebling comfort and luxury, you know, but be that as it may, I'd like to hope that, you know, possibly that there might be a glimmer of hope that I might take the hard road there. You know, one of the things that maybe some of the listeners here today might be thinking is, well, you know, was Bonhoeffer a moral relativist? You know, does the end always justify the means? I mean, you know, he was involved in
a
plot to commit murder. And you know, that's one of the things I definitely would like as we close here to make mention of the fact is that Bonhoeffer was ethically not a moral relativist, but was rather actually a very committed absolutist. And an absolutist is somebody who believes there is an objective right and wrong, and it comes from the position, the informed position of the scriptures. And as he was in this quandary, he was looking at really two paths of evil to take. One path of evil was to do nothing and allow Hitler to continue on murdering millions and millions of people. The other path was to commit murder, to kill Hitler and stop him from doing that. And Bonhoeffer had a very clear vision in his mind. When a Christian is confronted with two evils, he is to take the lesser of the evils and then fall upon the grace and mercy and love of God. And
exactly.
and that's what he did. Bonhoeffer was not in any way, shape, or form a moral relativist.
You know, we're not talking about some idiot who takes a rifle and shoots an abortion doctor. I mean, that guy, he gets whatever he deserves. But Bonhoeffer was a man in an impossible situation that simply leaned on his faith. As a matter of fact, there's a wonderful quote from Martin Luther King who said, you know, if you're fighting against tyranny and the government has a conscience, then take the way of Gandhi and nonviolence. But if you're fighting against somebody like Hitler, take the way of Bonhoeffer. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of sums it up.
Absolutely. You know, another area, of course, is that we would probably not consider Bonhoeffer to have a real strong evangelical pedigree. You know, being a graduate of the University of Berlin, you know, being a student of higher criticism like he was, you know, he the Bible really in the same way that a lot of evangelical Christians do today. But if you take a look at his faith, you take a look at the fruits of his life and his ministry, you realize that part of his education and everything was in a whole different environment than we find ourselves in today. And he actually was quite a worshipful and loving man. And I think that even though there's some question about that, I think that definitely he's a believer in the Lord.
You know, I just want to direct people's attention. The books to check out Bonhoeffer with are his Cost of Discipleship and the... What does the
letters and papers?
Letters and papers from
you
prison.
Know what?
And there's
we
a
have
good video.
Two books to give away. We've got about 20 seconds. Two books to give away. It's called what's it called?
My
then?
Soul Finds Rest.
My Soul Finds Rest. Thoughts of Dietrich Bonhoeffer on the Psalms. So give us a call, callers 3 and 4, okay, at 776-5368 or 1-800-373-5368. Thanks again to Matt McAuliffe and Chris White. Lord bless you guys, and thanks for the report on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a true gnarler.
See you later.
God is attempting to say something to every single one of us in every single adversity we have.